Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round's champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com, delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 129 of the DFO Rundown, the round two edition. As we are through a crazy weekend in the NHL, five game sevens, and we have the four second round matchups. Frank Saravalli, it was quite the Saturday and Sunday. If you love intrigue and close games for game seven.
We needed a dark day on Monday. We needed no games because everyone needed to catch their breath. Only Sunday was just the second day in the 104 year history of the NHL that we had two game sevens go to overtime in the same day. Right. That's on top of the three awesome game sevens that we had on Saturday. Do you remember when we were complaining about this first round, you know, not really living up to the hype?
Well, games five, six, and seven in the series, everybody kind of batten down the hatches, and it was like, okay, no more blowouts. We're going to play. And I hope that that carries over, Frank, but what stood out for you, if anything, of any of those five game sevens?
I would say goaltending. I mean, Jake Oettinger, there are no words. Like, the Calgary Flames almost got goalied. Like, that's the definition of getting goalied. And it's funny because the longer that game went on, the more I was convinced that the Flames were losing because they weren't getting anything by Oettinger. Like, the longer it goes on, the Stars are just going to find one opportunity and win and sneak out with and kill all of our Battle of Alberta vibes. And that didn't happen. Johnny Gaudreau, for the player that was perhaps coming into the playoffs with more question marks about his postseason play and track record than anyone else, delivers in such a huge moment, really a signature moment for Johnny Gaudreau.
Oh, huge goal for him. Huge goal for the province, Frank. Honestly, I think when you look at it that, you know, Edmonton and Calgary, the restaurant bar industry was crushed for COVID like it was across the countries. You look at, you know, they're going to have a great 2 weeks, regardless of who wins or loses that series. So it was huge from a business standpoint, I think, for a lot of Albertans. And, you know, it's been since 1991 when Esa Tikkanen in overtime won the last Oilers Flames series. So there's generations of fans, decades of fans who've never seen a game seven, never even seen a Battle of Alberta live. So
Tyler Yaremchuk was minus 6 years old then.
Yeah. Oh, lots of people just weren't ready for what's going to come. And it'll be a lot of fun. I just want to say this right now. Don't fight opposing fans. Okay. You can chirp, you can yell, but I've never understood the, you know, hey, you're a Calgary fan, I'm an Edmonton fan, now I have to fight. It's kind of stupid, but nonetheless, the thing that's like Miro
at least it's not LA. That means you won't get knifed, so that's good.
Fair point. Why did an LA King fan get knifed?
No, it just feels like it happens on the regular outside of Dodger Stadium or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's more, yeah, the baseball for sure. Yikes. You look at, I thought Miro Heiskanen in that game was unreal, too. I was waiting for him to pull a Cale Makar and finish one of those chances off because he had the
puck. Hit the post twice, I think.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, that was, I'm sure it was a stressful time for Calgary fans. As you said, they close to gotten goalied. What about the Rangers coming back in elimination games three consecutive times? You're down 2-0 in two of those games. They just kept battling back and found a way to win, man. I give them huge props because there was numerous times in games 5, 6, and 7 that I thought they were done.
They had no business winning that series. I'm sorry. Like none. I don't know that it should have ever gotten to 3-1 in the series because of, you know, how it went back and forth. And I think the Rangers just found themselves in this spot that they tried to get out of and finally just shoveled enough to get out. And The funny thing about it is Shesterkin was good and he was really good in game 7, but he wasn't outstanding really at any part in the series.
No. Wow.
He didn't have one game all the way through that you were like, oh man, he stole them one.
Yeah. Well, the Rangers gave up a lot, man. Pittsburgh had tons of chances in that series. So it was one where, you know, if you look at the amount of opportunities and quality chances, they were in favor of Pittsburgh a lot of the time. And so Shesterkin, I thought, still played well, even though he necessarily maybe didn't have the overwhelming crazy stats that we're used to. But he still finished, you know, very well in the series. It's kind of crazy. But
he was benefited largely from the triple overtime game. You take the triple overtime action out of it, he was really very pedestrian.
Yeah.
For his standards. So going back to, though, my point about, you asked me what stood out, the goaltending. You know, you have Ottinger in that game 7. You know, you look at you know, just the difference that it made. Jari comes in. What do you make of the decision? He comes in and he still gives up 4, which is what Domingue gave up the day before. You know, how do you feel about it? Was it the right call, the wrong call?
I think it's the right call. Louis Domingue's numbers weren't very good overall at all. And Tristan Jarry's being your guy. If he's healthy to play, it's not like he let in terrible goals. You're right. It was 4. I agreed with that decision. I think you had to go with him. He was your number one all year long.
So then you look at the difference maker in the Tampa-Toronto series in game 7. It was Andrei Vasilevskiy.
Yeah, that was his best game of the series. Like,
Didn't you know he was going to save it for that?
Yeah. Well, he found it out in overtime of game 6. That's where I thought Vasilevskiy showed up, was overtime in game 6. And I even said it on the pod, Frank. I said, watch out. The fact that he shows up now, that could be the difference for Tampa Bay. And it turns out it was. And the big story now, Tampa, Florida, is going to be the health of Braden Point.
Yeah. You know, and frankly, the health of a few guys who were banged up in game 7s. I have some real question marks about Leon Draisaitl playing the start of this series in the Battle of Alberta. I know that he finished it off, but I think there's some real question marks as to whether he's going to be healthy for the start of the series, because that is a painful, painful injury, a high ankle sprain.
Oh, 100%. And you know what? Like, he gutted it out, man. He played 22 minutes in that game. I give him a ton of credit. He said he was fine, Frank, after the game, which is what every player would say. I understand it. Although I don't understand, say, yeah, you know, I'm a little banged up, but it's the playoffs. You battle through stuff. I think it's psychology. They don't want to ever, you know, give the opposition anything. So, you know, the extra day, because, you know, the series we thought was going to start Tuesday, now they push it back to Wednesday. So that extra day maybe helps them. But high ankle sprains, as you had reported, Frank, those do not, they do not heal quickly.
Well, I mean, the truth is you can only really shoot it up so many times. That's really what it comes down to. And to do that, or try and do that for another whole 7-game series, I think can be really problematic. And I don't know that it's necessarily something you want to do. So it might make sense to say, hey, why don't you take the next week off and see if you can come back for like games, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, something like that. If you miss the first 3, I'm just totally speculating on that part. He may try and grind through it. I just think it's incredibly painful and it's going to be tough to do. And not only that, he was good in game 7, but you could tell he was definitely at like 75%.
Oh, yeah. He got better as the game went on, actually. His first few strides, you could tell he was really laboring with it, but it was almost like, you know, it went numb during the game. He didn't feel it because
that's the pharmaceuticals. Yeah.
Yeah. He definitely made
like literally.
He made some really good defensive plays for the Oilers in their own zone at key times, which was kind of impressive to me. Connor McDavid was on another level, though, in that game. And I think, like, you look at his domination in that series when he was on the ice. And really, like, there's a lot of I'm seeing a lot of stats that are being made of, oh, with McDavid off the ice. Well, that's, you know, it's really Drysdale in one game in game five. He got outscored 3-0. But if you look at when Drysdale and McDavid were off the ice, the Oilers are plus two. They outscored the opposition 4-2. You do that when your two best players are off the ice, you got a really good chance to win.
Their attention to detail was so much better in games 6 and 7. It just was their defensive zone play. They didn't make any mistakes to shoot themselves in the foot. They were clean getting back, you know, really hard on pucks. I just felt like that was the type of, it's almost like they learned that's the type of playoff effort that they needed. And if you're going to bring what you did in games 4 and game 5, that you're going to be in trouble. You know, you can't afford to take your foot off the gas. And I think it was an important learning lesson. My question is, will they have learned?
Yeah, fair point.
When it comes to the next series, because, you know, I was just playing back and thinking back to our pre-series conversation about this on the pod. And you said, oh, the Oilers will handle the Kings. You know, you said it almost like it was going to be easy. And in that sense, I think my response was they need to not shoot themselves in the foot. They need to not make their own mistakes that cost them. It's not that the other team's bringing it to them. You can't afford to do that against Calgary. They will eat you alive. You could get away with it against the Kings and win a series. You can't give two games away to the Flames.
Yeah, that's totally valid. I think Mike Smith obviously learned he had the one stick handling error, but when he was in between the pipes, you know, Mike Smith had a stellar.
That's why I didn't even mention that first game. I mean, look, that was just an unfortunate error, but game 4 coming out, getting shut out, it seemed like they were unprepared, maybe had a little bit too much fun in LA after pounding the Kings 14-2 in those two games, 2 and 3. And then game 5 back at home, again, chance, opportunity to put yourself in a great spot and you don't do it.
Well, you know what? It's interesting. You look at like Calgary, they were down 3-2. They lost that game 5, Edmonton. So you got both teams, I think, that we'll see if they learn from it. Let's go to the East now, Frank, and start Carolina, who, the ultimate homer series, they won all 4 at home. Boston won all 3 at home. You know, it's a tight game 7, although, you know, Carolina, I felt like for long stretches carried, you know, lots of this play. And now they take on a Rangers team who I think overall top to bottom is probably more dangerous offensively. They've got their top guys, Chris Kreider scoring, Panarin just scored. Zibanejad is scoring, you know, got Adam Fox, you know, Carolina, what do you make of the Hurricanes in this series against the Rangers? Like, it's funny because they're obviously the favorite, they're the top seed, but I don't know, there's something about them. Or do you think Carolina's also learned and they're like, hey, you know what? We got it. They were up 2-0 in that series and it probably maybe shouldn't have ended up being a 7-game series.
It should have been a sweep. I'm not kidding. Like I thought for sure the way they dominated those first two games, to have that go 7, I thought was a little bit alarming, but I kind of chalked that up more to a team in a matchup situation that just had their number, that just for whatever reason, when they were in Boston, just could not do it, could not get it together. I don't know if that'll happen again, where you have such a big swing like that building to building. I'd be surprised if it does. I like the Hurricanes because I think the Rangers just have so much to clean up. I was not impressed. And you and I think we're probably in agreement heading into the playoffs with Pittsburgh and how they were playing. They were way better in the playoffs, but I think a lot of it was due to really how poor the Rangers had played. Like Gerard Gallant, that like after game 5, he called his team soft 3 times in the post-game press conference. You talk to people close to the Rangers and they were saying, have you seen our guys anywhere around Louis Domingue? Like they're not making life difficult at all. They finally did in the latter part of game 5. And in that second period flurry, when Sidney Crosby left, and after that, it was like they were off to the races, but yet still found themselves down in these holes. There's a lot of confidence with the Rangers. They're infinitely more dangerous than Boston, to your point. I like the Hurricanes. I think, you know, I've been saying it all year when it comes to playoffs, the Vegas odds makers, everyone has been down on the Canes, and they've really been one of the most consistent teams in the league.
Yeah. I'm picking the Rangers in an upset because I think New York might have learned a little bit from that first round, Frank, because I think you're bang on about, not getting the pressure that they need in front of the net. You need more. I'm not even calling them garbage goals. You just need more will goals, you know, the will to go to the tough areas and stay there and create havoc and get rebounds and get screens and get some lucky deflections, and whether it's you or off the other team, because more chaos ensues when more people go to the net. Now, all at the same time, if you just funnel everybody to the net, well, then the pucks are getting blocked all the time. So you have to do it strategically. But I think that's going to be a good series. I have the have the Rangers in seven. And then, of course, we have the battle of Tampa Bay and Florida. And Tampa obviously had their hands full with the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll get to them in a second. But who do you like? Bolts, Cats?
Tampa. It's not really that. I need to preface this. I was going to say it's not really that close. It's an easy decision for me, I feel like. And I'm kind of surprised that the two-time defending champs are underdogs in the series and actually like somewhat sizable underdogs in the betting odds. The reason for that is they're just unflappable. Like you watch, I think when you look at that series and the way that it played out, Vasilevsky finding his form again, that team trailing at almost every point in the series, you know, they were chasing the Leafs kind of from game one, and you get to game seven in Toronto, like they have the heart of a champion. They really do. And I just think that expertise, full marks to Julien Brisebois. We talked this, you know, previewing the season, saying, how are they going to replace the guys they lost on the third line with Goudreau and Coleman? They had to replace the entire third line, and they did it. Like that third line was the difference in game seven. Hagel was great. Nick Paul scores two goals. Like that third line was the difference again. And they found the secret sauce, and they have Vasilevsky in net. So I think the Panthers, for my money, they figured out a way to wade through the muck against Washington. Their comebacks were extremely impressive. Perhaps you could say that this is a better matchup for Florida than Washington was. I don't know how you could logically make sense of that, in other than that it might be a little bit more open. But for me, the Florida Panthers never really, really looked like themselves, like the juggernaut offensively. And perhaps there was no way that they could continue to, because we had said all along, will their game translate to the playoffs? Right.
Yeah. To me, they looked a little bit nervous at times. And, you know, there's lots of people talking about the pressure that first round, right? When you're top teams, you hadn't won and they'd never won a series. And I think they can exhale a little bit now. I like their overall depth. The reason I'm taking Florida in this series is I think the health of Braden Point. It's clear that Braden Point was hurt. You saw him and he tried to gut it out. He took a stride and, you know, there's obviously something in his groin area. Now, maybe it can heal, but, you know, the chances of that being, you know, re-aggravating itself. And Braden Point has scored so many massive goals for the Tampa Bay Lightning over the last few years. You lose him. Now, you know what? Nick Paul's got to move up or other guys. And so now that disrupts your third line. I think that might be too much for them to overcome. And that Florida, I've liked their depth all season long. And I think they got over the nervousness of it. I think that Toronto series, you know, fatigue might set in a little bit. You know, Florida had more rest, excuse me. So I'll take Florida. I'm sticking with the Panthers, though, because I took them at the start. So I'll stick with them. And I kind of thought this would be the, I picked Tampa and Florida to win. So I'll stick with the Cats. I think that's going to be the must-watch series of the East.
Yeah, no question. Must-watch series of the East. But Florida has their own injuries. Like Aaron Ekblad stumbled through the end of that series. Their defense was banged up as a whole. They were missing a couple guys up front that were sort of, you know, getting treatment in and out. And Braden Point, I think, just from what I saw and people I've talked to, my guess is he's fine. I think it looked to me like not to play Dr. Saravalli, but it looked like a quad injury. And they examined him after that period. Remember, he came out for the second period. Shift. Everyone was surprised to see him back, but they determined then that there was no damage, no structural damage or anything like that. So I think there's something going on in that quad area, not a groin, that you may be able to actually get some treatment on that would open the door to having him be a participant. So I full marks to you for sticking with your preseason, by the way, pick to beat the Lightning.
Yeah, got to go with it, man. Now, St. Louis and Colorado. And Colorado, of course, swept Nashville. They swept the Blues last year. And I know it's a completely different year, but, you know, there's lots of same players on both of those teams. And, you know, Cale Makar, you know, 10 points in four games. He was unreal in the first round. Nathan MacKinnon obviously goes nuclear in the playoffs. He's one of the rare elite guys who elevates his game even higher. You know, St. Louis, their defense slowly got a little bit healthy, Frank. They get a little bit extra rest too. You know, I think that helps them, but it's hard for me to pick against Colorado right now. They got more elite talent in this series. And I think they got more overall depth in the series. Darcy Kemper avoided a very scary situation when he got the stick through the mask and didn't have any serious damage. I like the Avs. I think the Blues give them a run, but it's the Avs in six for me.
I agree. I could even see it being shorter than that. I just wonder about the start of the series for Colorado. They've had a week off, and I know the way that they ran through Nashville, you say, okay, so what? But I think it matters. When everyone else is in the groove and playing every other day and high level hockey, I just think taking that week off sometimes sets you back. It hurts you more than you think. Not to say you don't ever want to get done and get healthier and advance. But for me, I think that looms large. And Colorado otherwise is just, there's no advantage for St. Louis in any spot. And then you factor in the potential health issues on the Blues blue line and you go, okay, that could be really problematic.
Yeah, no. I will say this about the Blues, though, man. They grind. They've got a lot of experience in key games. Rarely do they beat themselves, and I think that's obviously they're going to have to play exceptionally disciplined. You don't want to give them too many power plays, and you just can't beat yourself when you're playing Colorado. You got to force them to beat you and see what happens. But the Blues, I think their experience will keep it close, Frank, but it's just Colorado's just got so much talent, man. It's hard to pick. And now we go to the Battle of Alberta for the first time in 31 years. You mentioned the health of Leon Draisaitl, which I think is a massive factor in this series, Frank. I really do. And you know, that's the main reason why I will go with the Calgary Flames in seven. I think this is seven games, 31 years later. They were seven games in Calgary. Esa Tikkanen scored the overtime winner after the Flames almost blew a 3-0 lead. And I just like Connor McDavid is going to get them to game seven and maybe he'll win. Like if Edmonton wins, I won't be shocked by all. Like, I don't think Calgary's an overwhelming favorite in my eyes, but the health of Leon Draisaitl. The other factor here is you talked about Florida. Edmonton's going to have to go to the net more and create more traffic in front of the net, because when you look the difference between LA and Edmonton in game seven, like Edmonton dominated territorially, but how many times did they have the puck? They're taking point shots and there's no traffic in front. They've got to have more guys willing to funnel to the front of the net. And it's going to be a lot harder against a much bigger Calgary defense than a smaller, inexperienced LA defense.
I agree totally. I'm going to take the Oilers in seven. I think this series is going deep no matter what. I don't think there's a ton that separates them. We talked about Edmonton's hiccups and miscues. I just, Calgary wasn't nearly as impressive to me in the first round as I was expecting them to be.
Yeah.
And that, and for me, it's really just the McDavid factor. If it comes down to one game, Connor McDavid's not losing.
Okay. That's fair.
That's what we learned in game seven last time.
Yeah, no, he dominated. There's no question.
By the way, can like with all due respect to Austin Matthews, like, can we put an end to the MVP debate? Like, I know that the playoffs aren't included. I don't know how you could watch those two series and say that he's Connor McDavid's not the most valuable player.
Yeah, that's fair. But keep in mind, it's only based on the regular season, right? So it is different. I think a 60 goal season is what a lot of people will focus on. Frank, I'll be honest, I'm surprised Shesterkin was a finalist. He wasn't even on my top five ballot.
He was not in my top five either.
Yeah, he didn't. When a goalie's in there, a goalie's got to play a significant amount of games. And he didn't. It's not a knock on him. He's the runaway Vezina winner, no question. So
he played 53. The reason I didn't have him on is he had a 9-game stretch with an 8-something save percentage, 893, 889, yeah, something like that. It was in that range. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. And that's, you know, almost 20% of his season.
Yeah.
You can't. And that was 9 games in a total 9-game chunk at the hardest time of the year to win. It was like March 10th to April 3rd or 13th or something like that, where it was a significant run of subpar goaltending. And I just think goaltenders have their own award. If you're really talking, I've made this point here before, if you're really talking Hart Trophy and most valuable to his team, your ballot would be 5 goalies every year, pretty much. That's how valuable goalies are. So you have to be truly, truly exceptional in my eyes to get there. Some people would point to his underlying numbers and all that and say, well, the Rangers aren't close without him. Maybe that's the case. But when you have almost 20% of your season that's below league average, that doesn't meet the bar for me.
Yeah, so that only leaves half of the season left that he played, right? Like, that to me was the big numbers. Like, when Dominic Hasek won, he played in 72 games. He played in 69 games. Like, it's a big difference than 53. Like, you can you have zero impact when you're not playing, right? When you're not dressed. Even if you only play, not on only, but you play 20 minutes at a forward, you can impact every game, right? You just can't. So that was my reason for it. I'm surprised Roman Josi wasn't there. He's obviously a finalist for the Ted Lindsay. I'm going to go on a limb, Frank. This is my prediction for the awards. I think McDavid's going to win the Lindsay and Matthews is going to win the Hart. That's what I think is going to happen. Because technically the wording's different, right? And so that's what I think will happen. But I could easily be wrong.
I think Matthews wins the Hart and the Lindsay. But that's just...
You think he wins both?
I think so. Okay. We'll see. Well,
very possible. Like, hey, at an under, you know, 60 goals is still 60 goals. It's pretty rare.
I just had a league executive call me after the game, the Leaf game on Saturday night, and just said, you were right.
Yeah. Like,
no offense to Austin Matthews, but that, you know,
well, McDavid's a better player. And I think last year,
We get caught up in the number. What is that? Like, Steven Stamkos scored 62, right? Yeah. He didn't win the Hart that year. What does the number mean? I don't understand why scoring 60 gets you.
Did Tampa make the playoffs though?
They did.
They did.
I think so.
Oh, I thought that was the year him and St. Louis finished like first and second or something and missed the playoffs.
I'll just double check real quick. But when you look at that year, he finished second for the Hart. That's it's 2011-12. I'm pretty sure they made the playoffs.
Oh, maybe they did. Yeah.
Oh, they did not. You're right.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Boucher was their coach. They finished. It was an 84-point season, not awful, but third in their division, the South Least. So
I think that's why. Because my argument is, if you're not a playoff team, even if you're off the playoff team, your value is the same. You're still not a playoff team.
Well, that's how McDavid lost the Hart too.
Yeah. So it'll be fascinating. But McDavid, there's no question, he's the best. Like, people have to sometimes, it's a single season award. It doesn't mean that that person's the best player in the league. It just means for that one year, he might have been a little bit better. But I don't think there's any. I think the argument ended a few years ago, McDavid versus Matthews. And no offense to Matthews. If people want to say Matthews is a better goal scorer, 100%. I could agree with that. But that's one element of the game. It's not the entire game. And, you know, quickly, Frank, before we get to Tyler Remchuk, we also have Jim Rutherford coming up, the president of the Vancouver Canucks. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, I know I saw that. Oh, they just got to stick with it. No, they don't. I'm sorry. If you don't make a significant change to one of your core guys, it's going to repeat itself. Because I've argued this with Toronto, and I don't blame the players. But I never felt Toronto was built to win because they built from the front back. And they got better on their blue line, Frank. still don't think they got good enough. And so to me, you've got to try to find a way. If you're Kyle Dubas, you're going to have to move one of your, you're obviously not moving Matthews or Marner, but probably William Nylander, you know, maybe John Tavares, although I think that'd be extremely difficult to do. You've got to find a way, package some forwards and improve your defense. Point blank for me. What do you think they need to do?
I think you're dead wrong. I think you run it back again.
Really? All right.
You had one of the best teams in the league in the regular season. You gave the two-time defending champs everything they could handle right until the final whistle. You had opportunities where, you know, if you look back on the series, wasn't the game six lead that they blew in the third period in Tampa, where they really screwed up the series and lost, was not taking a 3-1 series lead in game four.
Yeah. Well, but that's kind of been their MO, Frank. To me, there's something.
But that doesn't, what,
at
there's
big
nothing.
Time, yeah. Are they not the first team, like NBA and MLB, NHL, to lose five consecutive elimination games, right? Like games five or seven, because obviously it was a five game series against Columbus. Like, to me, there's just something that, and it's not a knock on any one individual.
Yeah, they've lost nine in a row in the Matthews and Marner era. Opportunities to move on.
Yeah.
And they've lost nine in a row. So yeah. I just don't see it that way. Like, I think of all the teams that had some incredible heartbreak that finally just a year, you're not expecting them to, they break through. Look at the Caps. How many outstanding, unbelievable teams did they have from 2009 till 2017, where you go, the same core, also built from the front out, to your point, with Alex Ovechkin and Nicklas Backstrom, that win in 2018. I mean, yeah, but how good were some of those
to the second round, like five times?
What does it matter? So this actually drives me crazy. And I was going to bring it up earlier when you said it, the pressure's off after the first round. That may be the case. I don't understand all the people that are hooting and hollering about the Leafs. They were still three rounds away, even if they won. Winning one round doesn't mean shit.
Well, I think it's psychologically for your group. Maybe you feel more confident. You're like, hey, we can win when it matters. And right now,
that was not what was missing in game seven.
Toronto can't win.
That's that. Do you honestly watch that game or watch game six and say that's the reason they fell apart is because they can't?
Well, okay. I'll ask you this, Frank. Nick Paul. Now, granted, new guy, somebody in Tampa elevates and grabs it and they win. Who is elevated in a key game for Toronto?
It's just those games. I don't believe there's any system. If we had another series where Mitch Marner didn't do anything again, or Austin Matthews really struggled, or, you know, even some of the other guys that we've been critical of, Nylander was great in key moments. John Tavares stepped his game up in the latter half of the series. Like, Jack Campbell was fine. I think you have to take a long look at the goaltending this summer. I think if you're looking at it, Jack Campbell, it may end up working out because he's going to cost less than he would have previously. I'm okay with keeping him. Like, he gave them exactly what they needed, which was a chance to win. Okay. He wasn't great. He wasn't terrible. Look at the free agent market. Who else is out there? Ville Husso is going to be expensive. There's no one out there unless you're trading for someone that you believe can put you over the top. I don't see it. I think you bring the exact group back. You bring the coach back. You bring the GM back. You bring everyone back. I don't think you make changes just for the sake of making changes.
Well, I wouldn't do that either. But to me, do they have enough grit in their top nine? When Tampa lost, they went on and changed. Like, you've got to add some, they're missing an element. You can't say every year, wow, we're close. Yeah, you're close, but that's the difference between winning and losing sometimes.
I don't think it was the grit that fell them against Tampa. No. I really don't. I'm sorry. Okay. Like, yeah, well, I think they went toe-to-toe with one of the toughest teams in the league to play against and did it for seven straight games up until the final buzzer in a one-goal game seven.
Yeah, but they couldn't beat a goalie who going into game seven had a sub-890.
Who has beaten him? Seriously, look back in the last 3 years. Who's beaten Andrei Vasilevsky? The answer is no one.
And now I
would you
go
say
back
any of the other teams?
But has he ever had an 890 save percentage?
But what did he have in game seven?
No, that's what I said up until game seven. So you said it, you agreed with me earlier. Like, they didn't win the games that they should have won, and that ultimately cost them. You can't give Tampa extra life because they will eventually come back.
Correct. But I also just, if we think Tampa's that good, then that also means the inverse, that the Leafs aren't that far away.
Well, what if Florida beats Tampa?
We'll see. So let's just, for everyone listening, since we were kind of all over the place, let's just give our four picks for the series and in how many games.
I got Florida in six, Carolina in seven, Colorado six, Calgary seven.
Okay. I got, in reverse order, I got the Oilers in seven, the Avs in six, the Hurricanes in six, and the Lightning in six. Okay, so our East different. Is totally flip-flopped.
Yeah, we got two different. I like it. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk.
Yes, another edition of Buy or Sell coming up here, delivered by our friends at DoorDash. 25% off and no delivery fees with your promo code RUNDOWNDD. My first question, the Leafs should be patient and not blow it up. I actually will skip that because you guys ruined it. Connor McDavid was the MVP of the first round of the playoffs. Buy or sell, Frank?
Buy. I would say Jake Oettinger in a losing effort would give him a run for the money, as would Carter Verhaeghe. But Connor McDavid led the postseason in points through round one, and it was also the manner in which he did it. I will buy that.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that. Had Dallas won, though, you could have made a really strong argument for Jake Oettinger to surpass it. And then you would have had Oettinger versus McDavid in round two, because Jake Oettinger was unbelievable for you.
It has to be Oettinger if they won, right? Like, honestly, I could make the argument, even though they lost, that he still should get it.
How about this number from Mike Kelly of the NHL Network? Goals saved above expected in round one, Oettinger 12.6. Second place was Markstrom 5.7. Oettinger saved like seven more goals than any other goalie in the NHL. That's unbelievable.
Seven more goals. And by the way, his goals saved over expected, like, it was some entire deep playoff runs for some goalies that he did in one round.
It's insane. Yeah.
No, it was amazing.
All right. The team that lost in round one that will make the most changes this summer is Pittsburgh. Buy or sell, Jason?
That's a really good question. I'm going to sell, and I'm going to go with the Dallas Stars, because I think they're bringing in a new coaching staff. And I think they're going to bring in a few new players and change a few tweaks. And they'll stick, obviously, their goaltender and the defense are good. But I'll go with the Dallas Stars because I think changes are coming there.
Frank?
I will sell as well. I think the Penguins are going to try to find a way to re-sign at least one of those guys. Although you could make the argument it's time to move on for all of them. I'm going to go with the Boston Bruins. Don Sweeney has not been talked about much. This was the final year of his deal. To my knowledge, he does not have an extension. Bruce Cassidy has one more year, I think. Will he come back? Will Patrice Bergeron retire? I just feel like, in a lot of ways, as much as we were talking about an end of an era in Pittsburgh, I think it really could be one in Boston.
Interesting. All right. The third question I got for you is our points bet bonus question. Shout out to Points Bet Canada, live now in Ontario. You guys each had two game sevens picked, right? In your series picks?
Yeah. I'd guide Boston in seven. They didn't win, though.
I meant for round two, the picks coming up. You guys each had.
Oh, yeah. I have two.
So I want your take, though. What series is most likely to go seven, Frank? If you had to put money on it, which one would you pick?
Battle of Alberta.
All right. The payout there on Points Bet Canada, plus 210 on that series going seven games, regardless of who wins. Jason?
I would take Carolina, New York.
Carolina, New York pays out a very nice plus 200 to go seven games. So there you go. It's going to be a wrap on another edition of Buy or Sell, delivered by DoorDash.
Feels like that plus 200 or plus 210 is not enough.
It's not.
Say that it goes seven.
Yeah, it's true. Especially because you just had five. Like in 1992, when there were six game sevens in the first round, there was none the rest of the way. So that's a lot of game sevens already. So maybe that's what they're going by. Who knows? But it'll be fascinating. I look forward to it. Frank, one team that's not in, but we will be discussing, because speaking of a busy offseason, the Vancouver Canucks. And our big guest today is their president of hockey operations.
That's right, Jason. Our next guest is a 2019 inductee to the Hockey Hall of Fame in the builder category. He is a former NHL goaltender, and he is a three-time Stanley Cup champion, leading the Carolina Hurricanes and the Pittsburgh Penguins to Stanley Cups. He is currently the president of hockey operations for the Vancouver Canucks. The DFO Rundown is pleased to welcome Jim Rutherford. Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. It's good to be with you today.
So, Jim, you obviously have a history of a lot of success, and you built teams in different fashions. You've been patient sometimes, and then from a media standpoint, I love it. Jim Rutherford trades more than anyone. So you're willing to make deals when you have to. When you come in now, and you talk about the coach's contract, even yourselves, how long do you find it takes to really get a sense of what your organization has and how you can maybe implement that moving forward?
Well, you like to know what's going on in a short period of time. Maybe you usually say, give me a month or two. But I think we have a real good understanding now of where we're at with the Vancouver Canucks. And it's what I said from the start. We have to unravel some of these contracts here to get more cap space to try to make some changes going forward. We still have some work to do on that. Now we're getting into the season. Once the Stanley Cup's awarded, that there'll be a lot more movement, a lot more interest in what teams are trying to do to change their teams. We're presently in the middle of having our amateur and pro scouting. So we're getting everybody's opinion on what they think of players and where they think we can get better. So I would say at this point in time, after being here 5-6 months, along with the changes in the front office, that we have a pretty good handle on what we'd like to do.
So, Jim, you look at your team, you've got a really sound goaltender in Demko. You got Quinn Hughes, who's obviously a dynamic defenseman. You got Pettersson and Horvat, lots of young skill guys. When you look at the construction of your team, do you just feel it's a little bit of tweaking? You mentioned the salary cap, or is there one area that you really feel as an organization you need to improve for next season?
Well, I think not just for next season, but in the long run, we don't have really any young right shot defensemen. We don't have any young center icemen coming. Those will be some of the things that we'll focus on here, whether we can do it this off season or it takes another year or two. But that's one priority we have. We have to put together a team for next year where we have more balance and more depth, more balance throughout our forwards, throughout our defense pairings. So the minutes can be shared a little bit better and give these guys, a better chance to perform at almost 100% every game.
So, Jim, when you're looking for that balance and depth, where do you anticipate trying to find it? Is it more of a free agent thing, or is that something that you accomplish by trade acquisitions?
It'll be both. If we have the room to do it, the first step's going to be, is there anything we can do here to free up some cap space to be part of the off-season game that everybody gets into? With the cap and with teams that have been all in here to win a cup, there's teams that are going to have to get rid of players, just to be cap compliant. And we would like to be in a position that we're at least in that conversation with those teams that we can make a deal. But if we can't clear up cap space, then we're not going to be able to be in it.
It's hard to do that and create that cap flexibility. Do you have a target in mind of an idea of how much you'd like to shed in order to get to where you want to get to?
Well, we can't shed too much. We're a non-playoff team, so we don't want to take too much away from what we already have here. We would like to get younger in the sense that, get guys maybe 26 years old or younger that we can bring that team together within the next couple of years. We've got some very good young players, as you pointed out here a couple of minutes ago. And so we certainly got a group of players that we can work with here. But I'm not going to say we're just going to limit the players that we add to the 26-year-olds and younger. you know, if the right deal comes along for somebody that's older, that's a veteran player that can have an impact on our team, then we'll also look at that.
Jim, you mentioned you weren't a playoff team, but if you look at your record since Bruce came in and you came in, you know, the Canucks were infinitely more competitive, right? I know you can't talk about what happened prior to you, but when you're doing your evaluation, your analysis, how much of that time, like, can you pick a certain point of the season and say, that's maybe more of a reflection of our team rather than what happened in the first 2 months where you just dug a hole as an organization?
Well, no, I don't think you can. Like, our team, Bruce did a terrific job, and he was the ideal guy at the right time because he came in, he's a player's coach, he motivates guys, and he got the most out of most of the players, and so that part was good. We are very fortunate. We have a franchise goalie. I mean, Demko is a terrific goalie. He wins a lot of games for us, and you need that goalie to be a contending team. I want to see us get to a point where we don't have to lean on him as much and as many games to win those games. So that gets more to the point of getting a little more structure in our game. And getting that structure where it makes it easier for the players to play game in and game out. And Bruce is capable of doing that. Like I said, he did a terrific job. He does a lot of good things with the players. And we have to see what we can do to help that situation, help the coaching staff get to that point where we can win on a consistent basis.
Jim, you have a reputation of being, you know, a very fair and really looking at the human side of things from people that I've talked to over the years that did interact with you. And, you know, Brock Besser, when the season was over, spoke very openly. You could sense the emotion and just how difficult the season has been for him because of his father. When you evaluate your players, how much does the human element that, and you know, and Brock was very public about that, but I'm sure there's things you know about other players that maybe doesn't get public. How much of that comes into the evaluation for you when you look at your team moving forward and the type of personalities and skill set you want?
Well, it's part of it. And we can never control in life what different issues that different people have to deal with. And unfortunately for Brock, he's dealing with this with his father, and it's tough, and it affected his play. And we were aware of it all along. You know, I've had conversations with Ben Hankinson, and we've talked about what he's dealing with. So, you know, with that being said, he was capable of having a better year than he had, but he still hit 23 goals, and he's a good player. So, certainly, we feel for Brock, and when we evaluate him, that will be part of the evaluation.
It seems like those talks or conversations with Ben will continue as you try and get a deal done with Brock. Is there a chance, you know, I think there's been lots talked about, you know, do you go long-term? Do you go short-term? Is there a chance maybe that you just issue a qualifying offer and that ends up, you know, sort of taking care of it?
Yeah, there's that possibility. I mean, that will be step one. And we can fit his qualifying offer in next year. It's not like we're squeezed that we can't fit this $7.5 million in on a one-year deal. It would seem to me that it would make sense with him being as young as he is at 25, you know, to have a deal with a little bit of term on it, but maybe not that big long-term deal because, you know, if he did a 2-3 year deal, he's still pretty young to get his long-term deal. So, but we'll get into that at some point in time. I'm sure they're getting Brock and his agent are getting prepared for what they think makes sense. And same for the Canucks.
It's funny because I, you know, asking about the qualifying offer, I think a lot of teams and probably agents as well are afraid of it, but sometimes it can actually work out pretty well. You saw Patrick Laine and the Columbus Blue Jackets last summer. They did the same thing. 1 year qualifying offer accepted, and now they're in the process of talking about what that means moving forward. Is it the worst thing if you end up doing that?
I don't think so. No. I mean, from our point of view, he's still team controlled following that. So we're pretty open to anything at this point in time.
Gotcha. And also on your docket, among the other things, you know, we're talking about building out your big salary cap picture and what it looks like for the next number of years. You mentioned trying to clear some space to be more active. At the same time, you also have to consider JT Miller and the possibility of an extension. Have you begun any talks on that front yet?
Well, Patrick and Emily, they work on the contracts. I do believe that Patrick's had a couple of conversations with agents and kind of laying the groundwork. And then Emily will take it over and negotiate the contracts from there. But I would suspect by the time we get to the draft, we'll know where we're at on those situations.
Jim, the Elias Pettersson, you look at his last few seasons, probably not as consistent as you would like. You evaluated, seen lots of young players. What do you see in Pettersson's game? What is, you know, is this what he is? And if he's going to go to the next level, how does he get there?
The way he played in the second half is what he is. He's a terrific player. You know, he's a star player in this league. And what you have to look at this year is he missed training camp. He had an injury that he had to deal with for at least the first half of the season. And to his credit, he got his game on track in the second half. And what everybody saw in the second half is what he is. If we can get a consistent couple of players to play with him, whether he's on the wing or at center, it's going to make it a lot better for him. And that's what we're trying to work towards, so we get more balance, more depth in our organization, where we can actually get lines put together that they can stay together for long periods of time.
When you look at lines nowadays in the NHL, there's obviously a few cases where there's trios, but there's lots of duos, it seems now more than ever. And, you know, ideally the best teams have three duos. And, you know, then you look at Tampa Bay and you've obviously built cup contending teams, Jim. What about the importance of just kind of like those sandpaper guys that can be a hard line to play against? Do you have enough of that in Vancouver?
No, we don't. We don't. And I agree with you. Teams that are putting their lines together usually keep two guys together most of the time. We did that in Pittsburgh. It's what we're trying to get to here. But no, we don't have enough sandpaper. And certainly with being in the East as long as I've been and just following the West on TV and in the Stanley Cup Finals and whatnot, being here firsthand, there's a difference in play. And you can see the games are heavier games and whatnot. Now, some teams are changing. You can see LA where they've started to move away from the heavier team to the quicker and more skilled teams. And a few other teams are doing that. But still, it's a different game in the West. And we have to change that. We have to get some guys, not a lot of guys, but a few guys that are a little bit heavier, play with some sandpaper.
Do you think when you look at the West right now, like when you built your teams, Jim, did you look to compete more in your conference and division first? And if so, do you look at teams like automatically in the Pacific, or do you even say, hey, we got to match up so we can beat Colorado, who looks like, you know, they're going to be one of the top dogs for the next few years?
No, we build teams that are capable of beating and playing in any style of game. And beating any kind of team. You start building your team to compete with one or two teams, you may not have to worry about that team. I remember in 06 when we won the cup in Carolina, our biggest fear was Detroit and Ottawa because we didn't match up that good against those teams. And we felt really good about the Hurricanes that year. We felt we had a chance to win the cup, but it was going to be difficult getting by Ottawa or Detroit. Well, as luck would have it, somebody else beat them out. We never had to play them. So that's why you stay away from, you know, identifying one or two teams that you think that you have to beat at some point in time because you may never play them.
Historically, Jim, the West has always seemingly been a little bit heavier. Do you have any sense of why that is the case? Why the game is a little different in each of the two conferences?
Well, they've had success with it. I mean, when you go back to LA's cup teams, you know, though they were heavy teams and they won cups. And usually when that happens, teams follow. But I really feel there's more than one way to win a Stanley Cup. I don't think it has to be just a team built the way that the prior team that won the Stanley Cup or some team that won it 3 or 4 years ago. You have to build your team in a way that is capable of playing all styles of hockey, regardless what team you match up against.
I mentioned off the top and made the mistake calling you the Canucks GM, but I've only really ever thought of you as GM. How different has this role been for you in Vancouver? Has it taken you any time to sort of get used to the dichotomy of the way it's structured and obviously bringing in Patrick, someone you admired in Pittsburgh, and then filling out the rest of the staff?
No, it hasn't taken me long. I'm at this point in my career that this is a good role for me. I've really enjoyed it. I'm really proud of the group that we put together here. Now we've had a number of months here to work together, and everybody's taken on their role very serious. We have great communication. Everybody works hard. We've got different ideas, different voices. That was what I talked about before hiring these people. And I really like our group a lot.
Jim, do you feel, as much as you're doing the job, how much mentoring is going on for you right now in your role?
Well, I've always hired people and let them do their job and give them direction. And here's where we want to get to. And everybody's got to do your job. Basically, what I do is I'm around. And if anybody wants to come and talk to me and, you know, bounce things off me, I'm going to do that. I'll stop in each person's office maybe every other day or sometimes every day just to sit and talk and let them bring things up. But I have to let them do their jobs. These are very capable people. And, you know, with my experience, I've probably seen a few more things than some of these people. And if they need my help, I'm going to give it. Otherwise, they're capable of doing what they've been assigned to do.
When you joined the Whalers, I think it was in 1994, if I'm not mistaken, who helped you? Like, who did you learn from? Who is the person who maybe just gave you the best opportunity to show your skills in management?
Yeah. You know, when I was a manager in the OHL, it's really where I learned a lot and asked a lot of questions. And, you know, some of the people that I really admired was Bill Torrey and Scotty Bowman. And Lou Lamoriello. And these are people that, you know, that I just followed. What would they do in this situation? But when I went to Hartford, I didn't have someone with a lot of experience there that was working in the organization. I just built off the experience I had in the Ontario Hockey League. And I would call these people periodically and say, what would you do in this situation?
Jim, has it been any different for you working in Canada?
I would say so. I think everybody knows that answer. You know, I've absolutely really enjoyed, loved where I've worked in the past, and looked forward to the opportunity to work with the Canadian team. But as you know, because you're one of these people, the Canadian teams are under a more of a microscope. And for me, I think it's great because of the love of hockey in Canada. Everybody eats, breathes, sleeps hockey. And I'm in a market here in Vancouver and the province of British Columbia where people love the Canucks. And it's a great feeling.
Jim, you were one of the few goaltenders who was drafted in the top 10 historically. It just doesn't happen very often. Where do you come out on drafting? Because there seems to be a little bit of change. Some people feel like, you know what, some teams hesitate on goaltenders. You obviously, you look at how it goes. I'm sure that you can't just pigeonhole and say, well, I would never do it. Obviously, we've seen guys like Carey Price and Fleury and guys go high. But you played the position. How hard is it to evaluate goaltenders in the draft? And is that why it's so risky? Just because it's such a harder position where it seems to be a later developing spot?
Yeah, it's a hard position to take these players when they're young. I drafted a Jaguar in the first round. And then I think it was my last draft in Pittsburgh where we didn't have a first pick. And we wanted to draft a goalie, and we drafted two, one in the second round, one in the third round, because they were the best players that were at that point in the draft. And we viewed them as assets, which it turned out they were, where Pittsburgh traded one of those goalies to Anaheim in the Raquel deal. So I just think that it doesn't matter what position you're looking at, whether it's a goalie, defenseman, or a forward. If you like a player enough, you should take him. You should not hesitate to take that player in the first round. Now, in Vancouver's case this year, with not a lot of players coming in the pipeline, and we have to try to build that up, and we have some good goalies in the organization, it wouldn't make sense for us to take a goalie in the first round. But certainly as the draft goes along, if we really like a goalie, we could end up taking a goalie. We're fortunate to have Ian Clark in charge of our goaltending within our organization. And he does a terrific job doing the background checks on these guys and laying it out to the scouting staff and the general manager as the potential of these goalies.
Ian Clark, one of the very best in the league. Jim, do you pay special attention still to the position? Like, I just remember offhand having a conversation with you a number of years back, sort of as, you know, the Penguins were winning that first cup there when you were with them. And, you know, I'd said something Matt Murray really looks great. And you had said, hey, look out for this Tristan Jarry kid. He's going to be really good. Is that just something, being a former goaltender, that you pay special attention to?
Yeah, it comes natural, you know. I love watching the new goalies. I love watching these guys that are coming up and doing so well. It's interesting about goaltending, though, how it has evolved and how they play different in different eras. Of course, the big equipment has changed a lot of that, the bigger goalie and the bigger equipment. And now things have even changed here in the last year or two, where the forwards have caught on to where the goalies are taking up so much of the net. And now they're getting them to move laterally and moving that puck across where guys have half the net to shoot at. So everything's changing. But one of the things I don't like about the present goalies, I know I've had some of the experts explain this to me. I'm not sure I buy it, but, you know, they're playing with that arm tucked inside the post all the time. And I just see so many shorthanded or short side goals go in now and leaking through that short side. I just think it's better having the arm outside the post, but only my opinion.
I like that. Speaking of goaltenders, then, Jim, do you need a backup for Demko that you can play a little bit more so he rests? Is that ideal, or are you fine with it, you know, a starter playing 60 plus?
Well, we had a backup this year that was capable of playing in Halak. The problem that you have, if you were the coach or I was down there making the decision, you got a guy like Demko and you're sitting there thinking, who am I going to play? And we got to win this game. It's just natural you're going to go to your guy that you have so much trust in. But Halak was very capable. He could have played more games this year. And we believe in Mark, the guy that come up and played some games this year. He played really well. We gave him a two-year deal on a one-way contract. So we believe in him. And I give Martin a lot of credit. He's worked hard to get here, and now he's here. So I would hope that we can space the games out a little bit more for Demko, and he can feel just as strong when we're going down the stretch next year as he does when he comes into camp.
Jim, last question. We know that you need to run. You know, one of the big things, you know, sort of getting to know you over the last number of years You don't talk to Jim Rutherford on game days. Where did that come from? Is it a superstition, or are you just in the zone on game days? I always meant to ask you.
Well, I'm trying to change some of my bad habits, so you can talk to me on game days now. But that was a superstition going back to my playing days. We were playing in a series the year that Montreal had the great year in the mid 70s, where they only lost one playoff game and I think only 8 or 10 in the regular season. But we won the first game in Montreal. I played that game. Ron Lowe played the next game. We come back to Detroit. It's 1-1. Of course, the fans are all excited and everything. And I'm coming into the game with my family. You know, we're walking in, talking la-di-da like we're going to a family picnic. And here I am, a few hours away from playing a huge Stanley Cup playoff game. And we got beat 8-0 that game. And I was so upset about it and so upset at myself, because I didn't keep the right focus on that game. And so I just gradually, that's the way it was when I played. And then, you know, when I get into more pressure situations as a GM in Windsor and in the NHL, it just became a bad habit. But just so you know, Frank, you can call me any day you want now.
Yeah, duly noted. Thank you, Jim.
Awesome. Jim, we always like to wrap up with a little fun called rapid fire. A few questions. The only rule is you have to answer the question. So we'll get to it right away. Jim Rutherford, now you've had a lot of reasons to celebrate. What is your cocktail of choice when you're celebrating, whether alcoholic or non-alcoholic?
Just a beer.
Just a beer. Okay. Classic. Jim, if you were going to give one word of advice for young scouts, what do you need to do to be a good scout?
You need to work at it. See as many games as you can. Don't leave the game early and focus on that whole 60 minutes of that game.
Which GM did you enjoy making trades with the most?
I don't know. There's so many. I don't know. I mean, the trade that I, and Frank's going to remember this, of course, it was with the Flyers, but the trade that probably worked out the best of a lot of trades. Well, there's a few tied in there, but was the trade Danny Markov to the Flyers for Justin Williams. And the Flyers had 3 defensemen injured at that time, and they were in desperate need for a defenseman. He was older than Williams, and so getting that young player that helped Carolina win a cup. But also the Brind'Amour trade was pretty good, and the Kessel trade was pretty good. But those are a few.
Jim, which agent have you enjoyed negotiating with the most?
Oh, I enjoy all of them. I don't, you know, it's funny, like some of these situations are tougher and people say, you know, who irritates you and this and that. I enjoy them. You know, it's the same as the media. You know, the media have a job to do and whatnot, but I don't have any issues with these different people in the game. It's part of the game, and the better you get along with them, the better your life goes.
And lastly, Jim, who was the funniest player that you, is Marc-Andre Fleury the funniest guy you've had around, or is there anyone else?
Well, the Flower, he's right up there. I mean, he's one of the greatest guys in the game that I've ever met. Yeah, he's a funny guy. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are great for a team that have great humor. It's good to have one or two on each team. So we'll just go with Flower for now.
Did he ever prank you?
He did not. No.
Smart man. Jim, thanks so much for this. We appreciate it. Enjoy your offseason.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Enjoy.
Thank you, Jim.
That's Jim Rutherford. He basically outlined it, Frank. He's going to be making some moves. It's just going to be a matter of who's moving.
Well, and really how much he can move. That's really the key, is how much salary cap space he can afford to pile onto someone else's plate. Now, I think the Canucks are in a great spot. The reason for that is they've got all of the positional pillars covered. Demko and Net, as you mentioned, Quinn Hughes on the back end. You've got Pettersson up front, who really seemed to show himself well in the last half of the season. You've got your leader in Bo Horvat. You've got an unbelievable, you know, driver in JT Miller. And the reason why I say the Canucks are in good shape is if there's one thing you can point to with Jim Rutherford and his track record, it's that he has found a way to go out and get complementary pieces. That's the hardest thing to do, I think, in sports. It's one thing to build. And I think when you look at those pillars, Jim Benning got slagged a lot. And there were a lot of mistakes that were made, but they have the foundational pieces in place to be competitive and successful. And now you look at what Rutherford did in Pittsburgh, finding the Carl Hagelins and the Trevor Dailies and all these guys that came in to support their stars. It's hard to find stars and difference makers. The Canucks have them, I feel like, the right ones. And now it's a matter of going out to get those other pieces.
This offseason with the salary cap and teams moving, we had Armstrong on last week and he's like, hey, we're open for business to get more picks to take on some people's salaries. So Jim Rutherford saying we got to move stuff out. So, man, as much as I'm loving the playoffs, the offseason is going to be highly entertaining, too, when we get into July. So enjoy round two. It starts on Tuesday. And then, of course, by Friday, we'll have a few games done in each series. We'll see the health of Draisaitl and Braden Point and many other storylines. Have a great week. Get some rest, NHL fans. You've earned it after a busy weekend. See you, Frank. See you in Calgary.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on DailyFaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you ready for playoff hockey? Well, listen up, because I've got something for you. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and here's a sneak peek into some of the questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. Simple, right? But there's more. You gotta decide if the total for the game is going to go over or under a certain amount, and the strategy doesn't stop there. Next up, you're picking which player is going to light the lamp first, and finally, you gotta predict which period in the game is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That is all up to you. Now let's talk prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. That's right. Treat yourself to some nation gear or even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the round winners, cash money. Cold, hard cash. We're putting real dough in your pockets simply for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. It's game time, folks. Head over to games.dailyfaceoff.com now and prove your puck prowess.